Les colloques du Collège de France.
Our next speaker is Manuel Thierry from ESPCI Paris, and he will tell us about the life of microtubules in cells. Thank you very much, Manuel.
My pleasure. Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Manuel Thierry, and with Laurent Blanchoin, we are co-supervising the Cytomorpho Lab, working both in Grenoble and in Paris. And here in Paris, we work at the ESPCI. And so if you followed lessons given by Thomas, you know that information in biology is not only in DNA, of course, it's also in every structure that you have in cells, that cells are computing information thanks to this information that is in their internal structures. So the question is not whether there is information in the microtubule network, although it's not obvious from this quite random organization, but it's how is information encoded in these networks. And it's an old idea that microtubules are well set to store information because these are quasi-crystal-like structures, so it's quite well suited to load information, and also because tubulin can come in different state. So this old theory of Penrose-Hamroff is that since you have tubulin GTP and GDP, can be like bits of information that could be stored in the different subunits of your microtubules, so that you could write down information that could be written and read, and even processed by maps that could work on it, and modified informations here, and with some layers of superposition layers here, you could process that information, change it, and compute. Well, unfortunately for this idea, the GTP-GDP state is not regulated that way, and it can be turned on and off in microtubules, so it can't work. And it found no actually applications that I know in our understanding of microtubule networks. Still, the concept was, to me, quite interesting. But the way I like to think of the way microtubule process information is more as acting as a sort of a nervous system in cells. They transport information and they collect information from all parts of the cells, and thereby they can somehow get information from everywhere, integrate it, and take a decision, such as, okay, let's polarize in one direction. So connecting information from everywhere and deciding, okay, that is the direction that we define. And the cell would move in that direction. And actually, the motility is also an interesting way to think about processing information. You receive information from your environment, and then you decide to move. And you move, and the persistence of this motion is also some sort of processing of temporal information, that the information is to be maintained over some long periods because motion is slow. Okay. And interestingly, it has been shown in many ways that microtubules are involved in the regulation of cell migration. But one example that I like very much is this work of the lab of Niels Galchart, where they studied the persistency of motion, and they did not completely remove microtubule because this has lots of consequences on cell contractility that would be completely different. They simply affected CLASP, meaning that it's a protein that regulates the dynamic of microtubule. And without CLASP, microtubules are more dynamic. And then, now you see the trajectories, they are less persistent. So the cells, simply with more dynamic microtubules, so somehow the temporal information is affected, maybe spatial information that is encoded as well. Now they some sort of lose the sense of direction. So, as you know, to move, it's an interplay between actin filaments that power cell shape changes, and also there is a tight biochemical and physical interplay with the microtubule network here in the center. So, the way I think about how these two networks work together in order to define those orientations goes this way. So I'll present you a few set of experiments we did that have somehow helped me to think of the way information is processed to take that decision to move. So first, the actin system is a cortical layer. So intrinsically, it's the first network that to collect information. And it's a contractile network. And by contracting, it probes the environment. It contracts through adhesion system. So it's sensing the environment. And by this permanent flow, here, if your environment is circular, then you generate circular rings, and then these rings move inwards. And that's how you sense your shape. And if your environment has a different shape, then it will generate a different way to contract. And for example, here, if you have adhesion bars here, your fibers will be static because they can't move on these adhesion bars, whereas here in the central region, which is non-adhesive, they keep on flowing. So that will affect the way their architecture adapts to their external environment. And that's a very interesting observation, that when you vary the shape of the environment, so the spatial information that is provided to the cell, they adapt and they change their architecture. So you see on this C shape here, you have three adhesive bars, one non-adhesive edge, and this is where they contract. And when you have two non-adhesive, this is where they contract. And three non-adhesive, they contract in response to this. So they somehow directly replicate inside, they make a negative replica inside of the spatial information outside. So you have a flow of information from the environment to the interior of the cell that simply, it's a photocopy of the adhesive become contraction in negative. Then this architecture that is directly the response of the environment flows, and as it does so, it influences the microtubule network that is inside. So if you have a sort of isotropic shape like this one, you have this isotropic network that contracts and brings the center of the network and the entire network here at the exact center of mass of your shape. But if you take different shapes like the L shape, where you have asymmetric architecture, where you have the flow coming from this direction, and here it's static because it's contractile, then the network is pushed on the side, and the centrosome here is no longer at the center of mass. So centrosome is not always at the center of the soma, as the name stands. It can be distant from it. It's actually at the center of the flow that is dictated by the actin cytoskeleton. And even without microtubules, the centrosome would be bring here and grow microtubules from there. But in return, microtubules also direct the actin cytoskeleton. And this was, we showed it recently with this interesting experiment where we find ways to have the centrosome highly off-centered without microtubules. And when microtubules will start to regrow, the centrosome won't move to the center of mass. It's the opposite. The microtubules, as they grow, will direct cell shape so that the cells reorganize and move and reorganize the shape around the centrosome. So these are the information of the microtubule. The microtubule, as they grow, dictate how the actin should grow and reorganize around itself. So it's not going to the center, it is the center and organizing the actin around it. So that's the opposite way of transferring information. So I did this scheme to summarize a bit this. In a complex environment, says gradients in that direction, but lines in this one, your cell contracts in some ways that depends on where adhesive and non-adhesive regions are located. So this is the first, let's say, the cortical sensory layer. You sense the environment, first layer of sensing. Then this flow is integrated by an astral network that are submitted to forces all over those different local places in a single integrated aster that will position at the center of this flow. Okay. Then this network, which is here, isotropic, somehow take a decision and said, okay, it's there is some flow coming from here, there is less flow, but there is adhesions, and it integrates constraints with different orientation. It's okay, migration, gradients here, adhesion here, let's go straight. And that bias in the microtubule network is the output layer, which will further then direct where the actin will polymerize and set the motor layer to respond. So you have some flow from the actin to the microtubules back to the actin to take that decision. So, well, it's the way I like to think of it. And but then many questions could arise from this, and one that was a bit perturbing to me is the turnover of the system. These microtubules, they grow and shrink very rapidly. And if you follow this plus, the magenta dots are the plus ends of Market Tubules. And they grow more or less at 10 microns per minute. And then to reach the edge of the cell, it's like 50 micrometer from there. And then if they grow, they depolymerize as much as they polymerize, you can estimate that the turnover has to be on the order of 5 minutes, which is the time it takes to grow from here to here. So how, by renewing every 5 minutes, so it's very fast. Well, it's 5 minutes. But as compared to the time scale of migration, it's very fast. Migration, it takes an hour to move from one cell diameter. So how you can renew every 5 minutes and take the same decisions in space and time to move over something which is 10 times bigger. So for me, two types of questions were interesting. In terms of spatial information, how the microtubule network, which is intrinsically radial, can direct a migration in one way, which is really, to me, an interesting way to take a decision. It's an interesting output. And how can microtubule maintain persistent migration, although they are so dynamic? So one... So I won't address any of these questions, I'm sorry. Okay, these are questions I'm asking to myself, sharing with you, okay, that we could discuss anytime. But there are some piece of thought that have been brought, and notably by the group of Chloe Bulinski, Greg Gunderson, 40 years ago. They looked at cell migrating, so they did some wound healing. You see microtubule organization here as the cells migrate, and they found that there is a subset of microtubule which is different from the others. They said, among all microtubules, these guys here are different. They are different in several ways. They are stabilized, so they are more stable. So this dynamics is maybe blocked in these guys or dampened. And they are modified. And we come to this after. Modified is deuterosinated. So biochemically, they are also different. So now you have some information encoded in here, spatial and temporal information encoded in the network. So that could be the key. And that's what I will destroy over the last 20 minutes. But that's the dogma currently. So what is this? What are these modifications? But it was very, very tempting, very exciting. That's why so the field has believed this for 40 years now. So what are those modifications? You have, so it's the modification of the tubulin that are building the microtubules. So this is the amino acid chain, and you have tyrosine at the end, and this tyrosine can be removed by some enzyme, or it can be added back. Okay, so you have with or without tyrosine. Microtubules, as they grow, they have the tyrosine. So tyrosine is here at the end of the C-terminal, of the protein. And when you have this tyrosine, you recruit specific MAPs that will modulate the growth of microtubule and specific motors. And once the enzyme, the detyrosinase work, they cut it out, and now they recruit other type of motors. So that's the basic of the tubulin code, how changing the biochemistry will change who you recruit. So then you transport dynein that go minus ends, and then now in this ones you recruit kinesin that go plus ends. So you can really encode spatial orientation by these modifications. Fabulous. So the way this works is that you have a cell with very dynamic microtubules, as we saw. And what is, so these are my personal scheme, but you can see a lot of evidence for all these steps in this great review by Sandrine Etienne Manville. So once they start to migrate, they can they assemble, if you have a free region here, they assemble focal adhesions on one side. And these focal adhesions will capture. So you see here now I draw them as stable ones. They will capture and stabilize those microtubules. This is the first step. And the enzymes are supposed that modify microtubules are supposed to act slowly. And now that these guys can survive for longer, they can be modified by the enzymes that take some time. And now that they are modified, then you can have some transport along these guys and transport specifically to that site that will power migration. So this is the common view of how cells integrate the role of microtubule in cell migration. And obvious, what is interesting is how these steps were the decision has been taken to go that direction. And so this pool of stable microchips are a focus of a lot of research because they carried so much information. But those stable microchips, somehow they are not so well defined, and particularly they are called stable. But many concepts are mixed in this pool of stable microchips. First, stable, for some people, it means longer lived. They live for longer, okay. But stable, we know that the definition of being stable is resisting to perturbation. You have perturbation and you go back to the initial state. And that's what represents being stable. And the perturbation that people are using is nocodazole. You remove free tubulin and they are more or less sensitive to that perturbation. And the way it is also seen is that there are biochemical signature which are they are modified. So, and how much these features being chemically modified, living for longer or resisting perturbation, how is the interplay between those features and how do they actually characterize these guys is completely unclear. And they are considered as equivalent. It's, you can use whatever readout for stable microchips. So, and this is easy. You label, you can see them. Here you can treat nocodazole and you can see who is resisting nocodazole. Easy as well. Lifespan of microtubule, that's the challenge. How can you measure the age of a microtubule? And you can track as they grow, okay, you have a problem of density. And you have many of those. And so you can track them, but at some points you can't distinguish them very well. And you can track the growing one, but what happened to all the others? The one that have stopped growing and the one that are stable. If you have one long microtubule here, how do you know which one is the stable? Okay, maybe it's this one, but can you track it for how long? And if it's here? So that was the challenge I asked to Morgan Gazzola. I told him, I want to know the age of microtubules. So he revived some old micro-injection experiments from the Kirchner lab. So he found a new micro-injector in the basement of the Hôpital Saint-Louis, and he followed the buffer that should be used to purify tubulin and inject tubulin in cells. So he said, at that point, I inject tubulin in cells. And now I can see, step by step, all the newly assembled microtubules. So you have the old one that are green because it's a GFP expressing tubulin, and the new one that are magenta. They were red actually. So he used that actually to characterize the repair of microtubule, which won't be the purpose of this talk. But still, he could monitor more or less how fast the system can be renewed. Problem with this technique was that the microtubules they have endogenous tubulin, GFP tubulin. So they are made both of invisible and visible tubulin. The new one, they have the same plus the red. So you can very easily see the new ones. And the other ones are green. But at that stage, 4 minutes after injection, you have a good balance of them. But when you wait for longer, you have renewed so much of your network that you can see few green ones that are the oldest one. But if you have any here, you can't see it because all the green is also in the new ones. So you can see specifically the new, but not specifically the old. So that was the task that was given by Morgan to Tanguy Choka, next student. New microscope, new microinjector. Let's get it serious. So, and he said, okay, we're going to revive another JCB paper by the Kirchner lab, still 40 years ago. And the strategy is this one. Your cell does not express anything, which is better, you can work with any cell type. And what you inject is not a fluorescently labeled tubulin, it's a biotin tubulin. It's in white here. So your old microtubules, they don't have biotin, and the new microtubule, they have the biotin. Now you come with some antibodies against biotin. You make them fluorescent, okay? And the biotin perturbs the dynamic of your microtubules. Those are fluorescent. And thanks to the biotin, you can have your antibody to detect them. But then, now that you have antibodies, you can use layers of antibodies. Antibodies against this one, antibodies against the antibody, antibody against the antibody, blah, blah, blah. You coat your microtubule with one layer, two layers, three layers of antibodies. So it's completely masked. So you make a sort of shield around your microtubule. And then when you add basic random antibody against tubulin, it cannot have the MAC antibodies. They can't access this MAC tubulin anymore. They can access only this one, which are the old. And now it's great, because now you have one color for the old and one color for the new. Take your two picture, your two channel, and you see the two networks. And indeed, if they, you see now it's great. As they grow, a few minutes after injection, newly assembled MAC tubules, you have a sharp transition. I mean, it's completely contrasted. You have your two pictures. So now the beauty is that then you can see, you can visualize the old MAC tubules, even when they are completely embedded in the new network. So it's these stable ones. Here they are. You can see them specifically, and not the stable one, the old one. I don't, let's not mix as everyone does stable. Okay, these are the old MAC tubules. Here they, we can see them very well. So he quantified. So the experiment goes like this. He injects from left to right. You start injecting, picking many cells. And then you start, and 30 minutes later, you are at the end of your cover slip. You fix your cover slip. The first one has 30 minutes renewal, 20 minutes renewal, 10 minutes, and then you take your picture in the opposite way, and you know how much renewal after 1 minute, 2 minutes, and then 30 minutes. So you could measure, you see this, the old start to disappear, and the young are now appearing. And repeating this experiment many times, you could here have a very fine measurements of the turnover of the network, which is the first measurements of MAC tubule network turnover. It was very emotional for me because I've been working on these MAC tubules forever. Their dynamics is so surprising. Suddenly now I can see how fast it renews itself. And key number to have in mind, half of the network renewed in 3 minutes. 18% of the networks in 10 minutes. Okay, and I'm glad that Steve Quake mentioned senescence, because then I make a parenthesis for the next slide. How is this dynamics? How does it vary if the cells start differentiating, changing states? So we tested two states that we found interesting. When they stop proliferating, they become quiescent. They calm down, but they can also calm down so much that they become senescent. The first state is reversible. Put back some serum, they go back to proliferation. Second state, non-reversible. They are out of the system. And we looked at the turnover of MAC tubule in these networks. And you see that in the quiescent cell, the turnover is exactly the same. I mean, we are expected then to be slower. It's exactly, the red is the reference of the proliferating cell. It's exactly the same turnover. In the senescent cells, which are bigger, you see that the turnover, the slope here is the same, but they reach the plateau, this famous plateau, much earlier, and you have lots of stable MAC tubules, long-lived MAC tubules that you can see here. Okay, so the renewal, part of the network is renewing, and also, but a bigger part is not renewing. And that's a characteristic that we found only in these senescent cells. Parenthèse done. Back to these dynamics. What we are interested in now are in this part where you reach the plateau, you see that they don't, although you are here 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 10 times the half-life, very few have 100% of renewal of their MAC tubule. All these are MAC tubule, 10% from 10, you see about 10% of the network is still in the old, not renewed. And here there are. So now you can see this, here you have 10% of the that are old, that can be seen on this image that is not animating. That's fine. Here also you can see them. These are the old MAC tubules here. I'm showing it because I like very much to see the structure of these subcellular networks. Then the question, these old guys, are these the modifying one? Are these the ones that have been modified by the enzyme? It should be the same networks. So then, it comes in terms of immunolabeling. I don't know if there are some people who do that immunolabeling in the room, but you already remember the six layers, meaning that you have first antibody, then washing, then second antibody, then washing. So now you want to see two other epitopes. Okay, so you, that's your seven steps of immunostaining, and then you will have to add, you start your injection, and then you have antibodies, okay, against the detyrosinated tubulin or against the acetylated tubulin, so they can go freely on the two. Then you have your layer on the new, You shield them, and then you mark the old one. So now you have old and new, plus acetylation, deterosination, the two marks, the two most common modification of microtubules. So you have a four-color image, but very, in terms of information, very rich. So you have old and new, plus some subnetwork, which is deterosination, which is, you see already, not all the old. Some that are acetylated, not the old, but old depends on the time of injection. They have a certain age, and these are younger, okay, but it depends how long you have waited. So if you want to know exactly how the modifications correlate with the age, you have to vary this age. So you do the same experiments. You inject from left to right, and you know that at the if you go from right to left, let's say you finish here, these ones have only few young microtubules, but if you represent microtubules sorted by age thanks to this clock, here you have more old microtubules. So in that representation like this, let's say that the renewal goes that way. So these have been renewed, have renewed four microtubules. This is the oldest that you can find in the cell. It will soon disappear. So the edge goes this way, okay, and the modification goes that way. And then you want to know, okay, in these guys, where are the modifications? So if modification accumulate on old, so, and the one that is drawn here are the non-cycling one. So these are cycling, and these are the microtubules that are not cycling. So what is expected is that modifications, they go on the non-cycling, which they are long-lived, and the ones that are the oldest. And as the network starts renewing, the old disappear and are replaced by newer ones, so your population is changing. So at the beginning, you have a certain, let's say 30% of your network that is labeled. And now, as you have less and less old microtubule, the proportion rise to 100%. Then at the end, all the old are modified. For the new, at the beginning, they are not modified, of course. And after some time, they start being modified. And they raise up to the 30% of the beginning. So that is expected for a correlation between age and modifications. We did the experiment. And here are results. There is absolutely no correlation between age and modification. Zero. See, I mean, there is no correlation here. Don't tell me it's growing. At some point, we were, okay, maybe we can fit. No. It's no correlation. So the only way to interpret it is that modifications are randomly distributed between young and old microtubules. So these are examples showing this. You see acetylation, because this is for the, these are for the acetylated microtubules. So you see acetylations, these microtubules are very new. They just appeared 3 minutes or less ago. And you have already acetylation on these 3-minute-old microtubules. Here you have old and new microtubules, and the acetylation, you can see some old that are not labeled, some old that are labeled, and same for the new, some pieces are labeled, some pieces are not. And when you have very old microtubules green, you can see that some parts are modified because they are yellow and some parts are not modified. So you can be very old without being modified. Same for deterosination, no correlation. So we have less measurements because, as we see in MEF cells, all cells are not expressing the deterosinase enzyme. So we have, it was a heavy, hard experiment, but still, you see no correlation with age, and it's not increasing as they become, it's not even the opposite, as they become older. So again, for deterosination, it seems to be completely random, and indeed, very young one with some modifications, quality of this image is not so good, and here you can see some green one that are not deterosinated, and some yellow one that are definitely modified. So conclusion from this part is that modification can occur within minutes. It's not a slow process, which was the base of the argumentation to say that you need to stabilize to modify. No, you can modify it within minutes. The modification do not accumulate on the old, and both old and new can be equally modified. So in this equivalence, we can remove this one. So what about post-translational modification and resistance to perturbation, which, as I said, is mostly resistance to nocodazole? So the way it works is that nocodazole is a drug that rapidly goes into cell and captures all the free tubulin. So now, you don't have tubulin to assemble new microtubules. So the consequence is that when you have your networks, you add your drug, and the microtubules, they can still keep on disappearing, but they cannot reappear. So you see progressive disruption by disassembly of microtubules. And if we measure how fast they disappear, by measuring simply the, we segment the image, you measure the length of your network, and you see that, as of course, the network is disappearing. And characteristics, 50% are gone in 3 minutes, 80% are gone in 10 minutes. We like when numbers align like this. You see, remember the turnover that we measured, two different techniques. This is nocodesol resistance, this is injection and measuring the edge. And they both somehow intervalidate themselves. Okay, they have this, exactly the same dynamics. Question being, the one who disappeared here, how related is it to the age of the microtubule? Is there a relationship between age and the resistance? Are the old more resistant because they are experienced? Or are the young more resistant because they are younger? So, the consequence of the same dynamics is that nocodesol, it prevents the assembly, does not affect the disassembly because it's the same dynamics than the turnover, which was a big question in the field. It was proposed that nocodesol could slow down disassembly, does not affect disassembly. And then the question whether it's related to the edge. So if we go back to this scheme, if you disassemble the old first, you can disassemble either the old first or the young first. And the consequence, if you disassemble the old, you increase the proportion of new microtubule. If you disassemble the new, you increase the proportion of the old microtubule. So we repeat that same strategy. We inject from left to right, and then the first one will have a long turnover, and the more you go here, you have a slower turnover. So different degree of turnover, and then we treat cell, well, Tanguy treated cell with 3 minutes of nocodesol to remove half of the population, or 10 minutes to remove more. And then he wondered, who disappeared? And here are quantifications. And so this is what should happen if you disassemble the old one, and this is what should happen if you disassemble only the new one. And that's in between. And when you wait for more, this should be the proportion which you disassemble the old or the new, and again, it's in between. So this shows that my clock is very easy to think of, but this is very deterministic. Depending on your age, you should disassemble exactly at that stage. But actually, it reflects the intrinsic stochastic process of microtubule dynamics, is that you grow, but the time you disappear is stochastic. So that's why you have you can't see this, you can't follow one or the other line, which to me also it's interesting to reveal this intrinsic property of microtubule in this quantification. So you don't disassemble the new nor the old. It's a stochastic process that will pick up some microtubules in any pool at any time. Hence, I see you. It's a random process. Might it be the same random process that modified microtubules? Is there a correlation? The one that takes longer to disappear, are these the ones that are modified? Which would set up the correlation between modification and the resistance. So then, for this, he asked the help of a new student, Flora Silberzan. So she treated cell with nocodesol and then stained for all microtubules, detyrosinated microtubules, acetylated pieces of microtubules, and quantified how much you have in the resisting pool. So, interesting part is that in MEF cells, so mouse embryonic fibroblast, all cells don't have detyrosinated microtubule. 60%, maybe the enzyme is not here, 60% they don't express the enzyme. So they don't have the detyrosinated tubulin. So it's a sort of intrinsic control. It comes for free. It's like if you have your mutant for the enzyme, but it's provided naturally. So when you treat with nocodesol, you see that the cells that have the enzyme, they don't show more microtubule than those who don't have the enzyme. First suggestion that modification does not help you to survive. But this is under quantification. So then, we did the experiment for, we measured within this population, the one who have, because here you could wonder, maybe this microtubule is more stable than this one. So in this population, we measured relative ratio of detyrosinated tubulin in the pool that resist. So they disappear, and as microtubules disappear, if these ones are more resistant, First, their total number should stay constant, and the proportion of modified microtubules should increase up to 100% because at the end of the treatment, you expect all microtubules to be modified. And in, so what we found is that the, this is the total number disappear 50% by 3 minutes, 80% by 10 minutes. But the number of modified microtubules, although it resists a bit, then it does it collapses. And the proportion does not rise up to 100%. It completely disappears. So this means that 10 minutes after treatment, you have only 20% of your population. Almost none of them are modified. Modification did not correlate with the resistance to nucodazole. So conclusions are that post-translational modifications are not related to the lifespan of microtubules. They do not increase their lifespan, and all microtubules do not bear more modification. And again, modifications are not related to the resistance to nucodazole. So modified microtubules do not resist better, and the ones that are resisting, they don't have modifications. So you can kill also this one. So that's interesting because the field has been thinking of it this way, but those modifications have nothing to do with the age nor resistance of microtubules. This is not a stable pool. It's another pool, a very interesting pool. Still, so in terms of temporal information, might not be the candidates for us, but still in terms of spatial information, what remains, well, still from the literature, we haven't tried to kill this part yet, that they recruit specific motors, and these motors will define specific tracks. And this, but the localization of these tracks, it's rather reflect localization of the enzyme that are responsible for this, what concentrate this enzyme in a specific region rather than another. That's the question. But this does not reflect a pattern of stability. So that was our contribution to the information stored in the microtubule networks. With this, I'll thank the whole lab with that is shown here, and particularly so Tanguy, who did this experiment, with the help of Jeremy, who go to the slaughterhouse to purify tubulin every 3 months, okay, and Flora Siberzan, who recently joined us. And thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.